Welcome back to StadiaCast, episode 101. This episode is brought to you by technical difficulties. For every time that you go to use a computer or the internet and it doesn't quite work, technical difficulties. Get them wherever technology is found. Welcome back, everybody. Lloyd and I were just having some trouble getting started. This is StadiaCast, and the show is live. We do record this show live every single Monday. Or I'm sorry, every single Sunday at 10 a.m. U.S. Eastern. Not on Mondays, because I'm at work at that time. So,
same.
Lloyd, how you doing, man? Are you ready?
I'm doing well. Just finishing off my vacation. I did a bunch of work during my vacation, but it was still pretty relaxy. Got a bunch of gaming in, so yeah, I'm ready to talk all about the Stadias.
All right, before we talk all about the Stadias, you can join us live Sunday mornings, 10 a.m. Eastern. Nerdnest.tv is the website you want to go to. If you are here with us live and you want to support the show, there's a bunch of different ways that you can do that. You can use Super Chats. You can hit the Join button. If you're not here with us live and you're watching this after the fact, you can use the Applaud button. And we have cool shirts and stuff that you can pick up that are all about the Nerd Nest. So make sure that you take a look at those. The 10K one will only be here until the end of the month. So make sure that you pick that up before it is gone. Lloyd, what have you been playing, my friend? He's broke his microphone. Talk about technical difficulties.
I didn't break my microphone. I have a bit of a microphone jewel now right now.
Oh, that's cool.
But put my little Stadia button there, just out of camera. I can bring it in, bring it out. Yeah, I've been playing a lot. We got a lot of game releases on Google Stadia between the Pro and other stuff that has come out. So I guess we'll start off with the first game that I spent a lot of time playing, and that was Pixel Junk Raiders. So that's from Q Games. It's the next in the long storied Pixel Junk franchise. Which is fantastic. If you've never played a Pixel Junk game, you need to go search them out and have a look at all the different Pixel Junks that you can play. But Pixel Junk Raiders came out as a Stadia exclusive with an advertisement that State Share is going to be one of the big reasons why this game can't really be done in other places. So I did a first look and I did a couple hours of streaming and I played a bunch after it. And my gosh, Pixel Junk Raiders is hard. Most of the Pixel Junk games are not hard. And then I saw the devs call the game, it's like Dark Souls with random exploration. And I'm like, what? Pixel Junk is doing Dark Souls likes? This is crazy. So jumped into it a little bit more and played through. And yeah, the game can be crushingly difficult. But the really cool thing about Pixel Junk Raiders, what Q Games did, is through state share, I can share a state to Bill, and then every item that I've placed in the world, there'll be a little hologram version of me there. And if Bill walks up to it and spends his 20 credits, whatever I summoned there will resummon. So if I put down a bunch of mines, because I looted a bunch of equipment and found a bunch of mines, Bill can go and not have to carry mines into the battle, because you can only carry certain equipment into each level, but he can go activate the stuff that I've done. But even better, if Bill then takes that and saves the state and then sends it over to Coda in the chat room, and then Kodiak likes it, and then he saves the state and sends it over to, Arcane Atri in the chat room. Arcane will then see my holograms and Bill's holograms and Kodiak's holograms. And then if that person makes a state share and shares it, then that person will be in it as well. So I've right after doing my stream or whatever, I was looking at Twitter, and the official Q Games website tweeted out a state share where people were actually lining up. So there was probably 40 different avatars that I saw.
Oh, wow.
And everyone was lining up right by the initial spawn, so that when you launch in, there'd be a bunch of people kind of waving and fiddling, nice, and dancing and doing all this stuff. And I'm like, holy crap, there is a pile of people on this barren wasteland instead of the normal worlds that are just like a barren wasteland. So I can see that there's going to be a lot of states that are going to be shared around for that purpose. I also found a state that when you load in, there's a bunch of like dead alien bodies, like big robotic bodies on the ground and a bunch of equipment. So you can use that as a way to, if you die and you lose all your equipment, you can go play this state a few times and get a bunch of, and get a bunch of equipment that way. It's kind of a nuanced addition until you really get into it. And then it's like, holy crap, you can place like your whole gameplay around these states that you have squirreled away, or you can be someone that likes to just be seen in a bunch of different random worlds, send the states out there so people can see your little avatar jumping around and acting a fool there. It's really cool. The game is hard. I hope it gets a difficulty patch, because I have a feeling that Pixel Junk Raiders might be too hard for some gamers. But with the addition of all of the state share stuff, I have a feeling that this could be a really, really cool game in a couple months once people really start taking advantage of all the states and things like that. So really enjoying my time with Pixel Junk Raiders. And again, this is a good example of a game that really can't be done on any other platform without some crazy workarounds. There'd have to be some in-game level sharing, and you'd have to have your friends on your friends list. So it could be done in-game, but it's much easier to just hit your controller, hit the little screenshot button, and then copy and paste the link to that state down the road and send it to your buddies or put it in Discord or whatever. Yeah, it's really good. Ruben in the chat room says the game is okay until you die and then run out of weapons all the time. And that's why having a state like I found where you can get a bunch of equipment really quickly, beat the level, and then go into any other battle. So if you die, you can get a bunch of equipment in this other state, which is, it remains on my menu of levels that I can choose from, which is really cool. You can go in there. You can refuel all your equipment and stuff, and then go back into a bunch of the other levels that you're having issues with. So really digging it. Not exactly what I had anticipated the game would be, but the state share addition to this game just makes it so compelling, especially once you find states that like 40, 50, 60 people have put their avatars in, and you just see all these smiling or dancing holograms as you jump into the level and try taking on and rescuing all the citizens that you have to rescue.
So a couple of things that I want to respond to. You said that the game is punishingly hard, and you hope that they do a patch, but I wonder I'm just gonna say some rhetorical questions for a minute. I wonder if perhaps they did that on purpose in order to encourage the whole state share thing. I'm having trouble with it. I'm going to share, get somebody else to load in their stuff and keep doing that. And then eventually one of us is going to be able to beat that level. That's one of the reasons that I think that they increase the difficulty so much. Because if you have all of these state shares, I think it's possible that the game just becomes way too easy. And that's something that occurs to me. The second thing is, somebody in chat said, and it's scrolled by, I can't find it now. They said something along the lines of the game doesn't give a very good first impression. And I would agree with that. When you first start playing, first off, yes, the game is very, very hard. They should have started like a tutorial level with a much lower level of difficulty. I was watching your stream when you were playing, and man, you could tell that you were getting so mad at the game. You weren't like freaking out or anything, but like your body language was like you wanted to say things that we don't say on our streams. It was clear that you were frustrated. And like that was the
someone
go ahead.
Sorry, not to cut you off. Someone actually put time codes in a comment of every single thing that I went, ah, come on, I just spawned. What the hell? All those things are time coded. So if you want to hear me freak out a little bit in the nicest possible Canadian way, you can do that on my hour and a half or 2 hour stream that I did.
So, like I said, it doesn't give a very good first impression, but not just the immediately hockey stick difficulty, but secondly, like the little encampments are really, really far away from each other, and I know that you have that ability to do the super jump or whatever,
yep,
but I struggle to understand if that's a good idea when you're first starting out, because you feel like, okay, I've spawned into this world, and this is an empty world. It feels empty and barren and does not give a very good first impression. As you play the game more, everything starts to make sense. I also think that, you know, you mentioned the idea of having the save states in game. That absolutely needs to be a thing. I mean, yeah, I can take a screenshot with my controller and copy and paste it out to my friends and stuff, but there needs to be like a menu item where I can say, show me the most popular ones so that I can try them out.
And see, that would be a really cool thing.
Right. Having this incredibly cool feature hidden behind a button on a controller that most people really ignore, right? You have it, or F12, like whoever, I'm going to say this, and there's going to be everybody in chat's going to be like, I do it all the time. But who hits F12 to take screenshots while they're playing the game? Most of the time, you're in the heat of the moment. You're not bothering with that. Sure. Same thing on the controller. A lot of times you miss out on cool screenshots because you're busy in the middle of a fight. Being able to share the state out is cool, but most people don't bother with that kind of thing. And it makes me worry that Pixel Junk Raiders isn't going to, I'm going to say, like, stick the landing, not because it's not good, not because the feature's not great, but because they're not doing enough. And I know that they tell you about it in the game, but I feel like they're not doing enough to surface those features to the average player who is just using a controller and playing on a screen, and they don't listen to this show. They don't read Stadia news.
They don't even know what Stadia share is.
Right, exactly. Like, it's this hidden thing, and it's really cool, but it needs to not be hidden.
Yeah, the onboarding needs some work. The game has destructible weapons like Breath of the Wild, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. That, I think, is too limiting. You get a weapon, like I got a weapon early on, and then after killing 10 enemies, my weapon blew up. It's like, what the hell? How did I find a weapon that was so weak? And what the developers have done is you can look at your map and you can see that little, like, kind of staticky areas, and that shows where there's people to rescue. But there's a whole world, and you can go around and you can get more of the little gems in the game. But a lot of the little encampments where the gems are, there'll be little things that you can break to get equipment and things like that. So if you're just rushing from, I don't even know what to call it. I guess they're settlements, but they show up as the little static. So if you're just rushing from one staticky area to another staticky area to beat the game as quickly as possible, you're going to run into some issues. And the game doesn't do a good job in explaining that to you. Like, when you level up for the first time and you get to unlock your first patch for your computer that controls the little avatar that's in the world, they don't explain which ones would be good at the start. Like, maybe what Pixel Junk should do is lock all of them except for, like, the top three that you need to have right at the start, which is the first one that everybody should have is when you die, leave your body in the world so you can go get your equipment back. That should be the first one you get. The second one you get should be health. And then the third one you get maybe is like add on a second weapon or do a triple jump or something like that. So they could play with the onboarding a little bit. They can make your weapons last a lot longer. I think that would go a long way to helping, because it is crushingly difficult. It's like there's after you play a couple levels, it's like, oh, there's some mysterious transmission. And it's like, what's that? You can't select it from the menu. It's really weird. Then you play another level and you come back and it's like, oh, we've determined what this transmission is. And then the only thing you can select is that transmission, which is the first boss battle. And I've seen so many comments where people don't know how to beat the boss because it doesn't teach that to you. The way to beat the boss is to charge up your little quantum scepter. You have to kill a bunch of enemies to charge up your quantum scepter, and then you attack the boss with that. The boss dies, a bunch more enemies spawn, you have to kill them. You have to do that three times, but the game doesn't tell you that at all. So I could see that being very difficult as well. So I think there's some balancing that needs to be done. The game does get more than... It does move away from just... sand. when you after you beat the first boss, the levels that you jump in might have some other biomes that spawn different horrible creatures that that want to pound you into the sand or grass, depending on which biome you're standing in at the time. So the game does have a difficulty curve, but I think that the difficulty when you first start is just way too high, and they need to do a better job kind of handholding people, because there's so many people that I saw in comments on my videos, or our videos rather, or other people's videos saying, this is too hard. I don't know what I'm doing. I've stopped playing and I'm not going to jump back in, is kind of their comments. And it's like, oh, okay. A little bit more onboarding, a little bit more handholding at the start to kind of to teach people what to do, and then maybe show them, like, the first tutorial level maybe is, okay, here are the areas that you have to go, but did you know that if you go here, here, and here, there's going to be a different structure? You can explore for these structures and find equipment, and just have kind of like a baked world that everybody starts in, and kind of show you the different things that you can do. So it's not just spawn, run to the areas, save your people, and then beat the level. It's more, hey, if you do a little bit more exploration, you're going to have way more equipment to then take on the rest of the game. So, yeah, it's a good first kick at the can. I'd like to see some patches and some changes coming to Pixel Junk Raiders. But what is there? Once I got into it and stopped screaming about the big crazy Hulk boss that kept following me around the whole level. Once I'm done yelling about that, I'm really, really enjoying Pixel Junk Raiders, and it'll be really interesting to see how it changes over the next little bit.
Yeah. So I've been playing Pixel Junk Raiders too, and I agree with just about everything that you've said. I've also been playing Baldur's Gate 3 again. This time I'm playing through as a rogue. I'm trying to go super, super stealthy. I was playing as a druid, and there was this cool moment where I was like, oh, okay, I can definitely see a spot where I can easily sneak up and start taking dudes out, even though I'm a druid. And I did that, and I was like, okay, that was too much fun re-rolling as a rogue. And so I started playing as a rogue. It was funny because my wife was up here and I was playing, and she walked in and sat down, and she was watching me play for a little bit, and then she left and came back. And I had just gotten caught back up to where I was on my last character, almost the exact same spot. And so she walks in and she goes, what have you been doing? You're talking to the same people still? And I was like, no, this is a different character. But that game is so fun. And I've totally got the whole D&D itch going on because, you know, our group is playing D&D coming up soon. And I absolutely love Baldur's Gate 3, and I'm so happy that it's going to just keep growing. But the reason I brought it up is because, do you feel like Pixel Junk is, I don't want to say early access, but maybe early access? Because it just feels, I don't want to say unpolished, but it feels like it's missing some things that are needed and should be there.
Yeah, a little bit. It's one of those games where I'm trying to think of a game that was similar in comparison. It kind of launched, and there was a little bit of people talking, a few people talking, and then all of a sudden people figured out a way past that, and then all of a sudden the game exploded. I remember it happening in other games. I can't think of one off the top of my head. And it's a game that is designed to be a sandbox game with very little hard added parts to the different worlds. And what I mean by that is they're not adding a set piece to a particular world randomly based on your performance in earlier levels. The levels are completely random until you get to the boss battles, which are the same for everybody. Mm-hmm. So what they could have done is they could have done a little bit more handholding, where the first few levels that you go into, it could have been, okay, there's these four Lego pieces that we're going to snap together, and then we're going to make the rest of the world random, so that everybody's first, say, three, four, five levels would be kind of the same. It does feel a little bit early access to me, but I hope that Q Games is going to keep working and iterating on this a little bit. Windbound, Ruben, perfect explanation, perfect game that I was thinking of, where you play the game, you beat the first level, you think you're the smartest person alive, and then all of a sudden your ship explodes, and it's like, what the hell? And then you start the game over in the second level with harder enemies with no loot at all. And that's very much what Pixel Junk Raiders does. Like, I beat the boss, went into my next level, died, couldn't get my body because I respawned, went after my body, died again. So all of the loot that I had been amassing through 10 levels was gone. Every weapon that I'd been storing, every upgrade and little artifact that I could drop down disappeared. And I'm like, oh my God, I beat the first boss. I should at least start with base units or base equipment now that I've gotten so far in the game. So yeah, little things like that would be good. Yeah, it's tough to say. I really, really enjoy the game, but yeah, I can see how a lot of people would think that it feels a little bit unfinished. And that's just because it's, as people in the chat room have been saying, it's very much like a 1990s Super Nintendo game where you want to go out for recess at school and talk to your friends to figure out how to get past a certain area. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of it is like, okay, I'm here. What do I do? And it's just like, oh, did you know you just go over here? And you do this thing, and it's like, oh my God, why didn't I think of that myself?
Yeah.
It has very much a lot of those types of little elements inside of it.
So what else have you been playing?
Another pro game, Avicii Invector, came out. I've been loving Avicii Invector. I love Avicii's music. Really sad that he passed away, that we'll get no more music out of Avicii, and it really sucks for everybody in his life, of course. But the game that I've been playing on Stadia is really good, really, really good. A lot of people have been complaining about timing issues. They're saying latency or lag is getting in the way. I don't think so. I think this game is just very, you have to be right on the beats, and apparently that's how it plays across all the different platforms, not just Stadia.
Okay.
But what I've done multiple times is gone through easy, because easy only has a couple different button presses, and I'll crank my headphones to 11, and I'll just sit there and I'll play the game, get into a bunch of the songs that I really like, and just like it makes all the hairs on the back of my neck and my arms just stand up at some parts. Like, the music is just so good, and yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I've wanted to pick this game up for quite some time, and it's been a joy to get in there, experience some of Avicii's music again through this video game form. It's been a lot of fun.
So the only other game that I really played this week, other than Tabletop Simulator, because I was doing goofy stuff, was more Pac-Man. Now that it's a pro game, everybody who's on pro has access to it. That game is just so good. I love Pac-Man. I don't have anything to say about it. That's the other game that I've been playing. You also played Saints Row, right?
Yeah. Before Saints Row, I want to quickly jump into a game that isn't pro. It's called It Came From Space and Ate Our Brains. Mm. It's a up to 4-person cooperative dual stick shooter. It's been available on other platforms. It's available now on Stadia. I think it's like $15. I picked it up mainly because I wanted to play multiplayer with the family, and I thought this would be a fun game to play 4 players and get in. I didn't get a chance to play it 4 players because of a super long game of what is it called? Phase 10, which is a little card game.
Oh, that, I love Phase 10.
We played a Phase 10 thing. It took over 2 hours to complete it. So that wow, dug into the rest of the family game time. If you're curious about this game, check out my first look. It's a dual stick shooter. So you're running through levels, shooting aliens, collecting money, upgrading your weapons. And it has a very Left 4 Dead kind of element where partway through the levels, you all have to get to a safe room, and you all have to fight to get to that safe room. And then when you're in the safe room, the door closes and the other door closes and another chunk of that level opens up. So it's a really fun game. I want to play it multiplayer. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to do that before the recording, but go check out my first look. It's a fun game, very minimalistic, and people are going to say, hey, this belongs on a phone. Well, it's on all the different platforms, so it's not like this is just an iPhone game that someone's trying to sell on the Stadia store. Not that that would be a bad thing if that's what they were doing. And then last, but definitely not least, I've been playing a little bit of Saints Row 3. I wanted to get a little bit more time into it, and I sadly didn't. I did a first look. Not much to say about Saints Row 3 other than this game has been out for a long time. This is the remastered version. Developers have confirmed that it runs at just a little bit above 1080p. So I've seen a bunch of complaints out there, but a lot of times when developers are using old engines and old assets, the cost to increase it past 1080p would be way more expensive than just making the game run. Like getting it running on Stadia would be easy, but updating all those assets to make it look better on the platform would be a little bit more expensive from that standpoint. I played it on PlayStation 4 and I played it in 1080p as well. So it's not like this is new. Saints Row is kind of like a more zany Grand Theft Auto. There's a lot of crazy stuff that happens, a lot of over the top stuff, and a lot of very non-family friendly stuff. So keep this one away from the little ones. Yeah. There's in particular in my first look, I go into the weapon shop to upgrade, and you go to the melee weapons. And I totally forgot one of the pre-order bonuses with, I think, the PlayStation 3. You could actually get a physical version of this very long thing, which was funny at the time. But then I totally forgot that that was in the game. So, yeah, there's a very long melee weapon that you can upgrade. And I'm like, oh, I got to get out of this menu really quick. The game is crazy. You have to upgrade your character and you get like superpowers, not as superpowers as Saints Row 4, but you get way more powers, the ability to call in all your people and stuff like that. It's it's good. I'm a big fan of Saints Row 3 and it's really great to see it on Stadia.
The idea that people expect developers to take their games that they were made like however long ago and recreate the entire thing just so that they can have a higher resolution is that's just crazy to me. Like if they do that, like if a company ports their game to Stadia, and in order to appease everybody, they have to make sure that this game runs at 4K with 4K textures and all this, they're never going to make another new game again. Like they exactly. They just can't do everything all at once. So if you want a Saints Row 5, then you should probably be okay with the 1080p textures in Saints Row 3, which is a game from like 10 years ago. So I think it's okay. So Jerome is saying it's the remastered version though, and I get that.
It's remastered from the PlayStation 3. Is what it is.
Yeah.
So it came out on the PlayStation 3 and then was remastered for the PlayStation 4 or Xbox 360, Xbox One. So that is what the remastered is. It's just a continuation of that one, which came out last console generation.
Right. It's not a new game. It's a port of a remastered version.
Correct.
That's like okay, so I'm going to do a Nintendo example here. On the Super Nintendo, they brought out Super Mario All-Stars, which were remastered versions of Super Mario Brothers 1, 2, and 3, and the Japanese version of Super Mario Brothers 2. That's like me being upset that they didn't completely redesign everything when they brought that port, a port of that Super Nintendo game, to the Nintendo Switch. Like that's equivalent thing. It's easier to understand because you're looking at something that's super, super old, but it's kind of the same thing that people are asking for. So I don't understand why people are upset about 1080p ultra settings when you're talking about a 10-year-old game. It just doesn't make sense to reinvent the wheel.
And a lot of the talk, out there about resolution is people that have taken one screenshot and they do the pixel counting on one screenshot and they're like, this isn't 1080p. Well, pretty much every game engine these days has dynamic resolution. So you look at a scene the first time, it might be 720p, but then you look at it a second time and it might be 2K because it's loaded all the assets into the world and whatever pipeline that they're using to get all this stuff into the rendering pipeline has either it's not choking anymore from loading everything in the world. So the resolution bumps up. So that's pretty common as well. But in this instance, the developers have came out and said that the UI is 4K. So all the user interface, all your health bars and the text and all that stuff is 4K. but it's running a little bit more than 1080p behind it. So it's probably running at the same resolution that the PlayStation 4 Pro ran at, using a similar technique where the UI was higher resolution than the actual video. And yeah, you can play around with it a little bit and make it. No time to game 62. If Saints Row is 10 years old, why is it so expensive on Stadia? This is a remastered version, and it's the exact same price on Xbox and PlayStation as well. So it's not really more expensive. It's the same price as it is on every other platform.
It's expensive because games are expensive to make, and if they don't charge a certain amount of money, then they won't make any money, and then they won't make any games, and then we'll be sitting here, I don't know, talking about something else. What would we be talking about? Who knows?
I don't know. Cat tracks for cameras, I think.
Yeah. I will say this. I do like the idea. I always appreciate it when developers make the UI as high resolution as it can possibly be, because that doesn't really take up a whole lot of processing power to make the UI really high resolution. But when you're old and have crappy eyes, being able to read stuff is awesome. And I like that it's not blurry. So there's that as well. Any other games that you played this week?
Not really. Well, I've talked enough about all the games I've been playing on Stadia. It's been a good week for Stadia gaming, getting a lot of really great games to play. So get out there and check out what is available, folks.
There you go. Sitting right to your left, I believe, Lloyd, is an Xbox Series X, yeah?
Yeah, right here.
So it turns out that they are putting the Chromium Edge browser on the Xbox Series X, or well, on the new Xboxes. And because it's going to have that browser, it is therefore able to run Stadia. So you can play Stadia on your Xbox. So if you want to play Pac-Man Mega Tunnel Battle or Neverwinter Nights on your Xbox, you can, if you have it, if you have that Edge browser, which I think is available through, like, not necessarily, it's essentially a beta program. I think they call it
Xbox Insiders.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. I couldn't remember. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that, man?
I'm excited about it. It's very early in the Insiders, though, so you have to be an alpha insider. So you had to have been part of the Insider program for a number of years and do a bunch of things. I'm really excited for, I think I'm like beta, or I think, I don't think they call it beta. Maybe it's Delta. I can't remember what they're different. They're different little, I don't know, buckets of people are called in the Insider program. I'm not alpha. I'm pretty far down the list, so it'll take me a while to get it. I want to get it. The ability to run Stadia and GeForce and Luna and you name it, anything that can be accessed through a web browser on an Xbox is fantastic. And I think that is a good thing for Microsoft to add on. I don't know if they did it on purpose. They probably just, it's a natural byproduct of having a web app and a standards compatible web browser like Edge using the Chromium core. I'm really excited for the future where I have one box connected to my TV and I'm playing four or five different services on it, just like I do now with streaming. I buy one streaming box and I have six different streaming services on it. It'll be the same thing for gaming, and I'm really, really excited. Yeah, press start once. They call them rings. That's right. The different rings. Alpha ring, beta ring. That's right. You jogged my brain. Press start once.
Anything that can decrease the number of things that I have to have plugged into a wall or an HDMI port on the back of my TV is always a good thing. Now, this won't help me because I don't have a Series X and I don't have a PS5, but I think that eventually we'll probably see, you know, things like Stadia and GeForce Now and all of these things, maybe Luna, although I think you have to have like you have to fool it into
for
thinking
now,
it's
yeah.
some other browser in order to use it. But like being able to use all of these other things, I really hope that Xbox doesn't say, oh, we're going to block that. Because if they did that, that would be really, I would think that would be terrible. I don't think that they would do that. What do you think that they would?
I don't think so. I think at the start, like when Google came out supporting phones, it supported two phones, and everyone's like, this is dumb. I have an Android phone. Why can't I play it? Well, because they want to have the they want to have a small number of test devices so they can make sure it works 100% before they open it up. Yeah. And I think that's probably what Luna's doing as well. They want to lock it down to Fire Sticks or other web browsers on PCs. They don't want you running it on weird hardware because they don't want to deal with that support. I'm sure down the road when it's not beta anymore, it'll be available widely across all different platforms.
Well, I don't know about Luna so much. They tend to, like, it's hard to find certain Amazon, like, Amazon really wants you to use Fire stuff.
I'd agree if you could only get Prime Video on Fire Sticks. They've moved it to every other streaming device out there. So if they've done that for their music and their video, I can't see their gaming being any different. But
you're probably right. For sure. All right, fingers crossed. We keep talking over each other. Sorry. all right. So we've got that out of the way. The next thing, Darksiders 2, Death. I hate this title. It's so stupid. Darksiders 2, Death Definitive Edition. It's very hard to say. And look at that. I can't show it. So I'll have to fix that later. Darksiders 2, Death Definitive Edition. Has been classified by the USK. This is essentially one of those websites that like the ESRB or PEGI or the KSB, where they are saying this is for people 16 and up. This is T for teen, E for everyone, whatever. And they have rated Darksiders 2 for Google Stadia. Which means my guess is it's probably coming pretty soon. The only Darksiders game that I ever played, and I've heard nothing but good things about the Darksiders games in the past, but the only one that I ever played was the game that came out, I believe it was on Stadia before anywhere else, and that was Darksiders Genesis?
Yeah,
Darksiders exactly. Genesis, which is very different than the other Darksiders game. That was a top-down hack and slash style dungeon crawler,
yep.
Whereas the other Darksiders games are essentially what people have described them to me as a more mature version or more not mature a version of Zelda that is made for older gamers, I guess is the way that I would describe it. Yep. And I've heard nothing but good things about it. Have you played the Definitive Edition?
I have played the Definitive Edition of Darksiders 2. I love Darksiders, the franchise. 1 and 2 were great games. Genesis was such a different experience, but it was fantastic for different reasons. Getting this on Stadia is going to be good. I mean, Darksiders is a really fun game. It gives you a Zelda-like, like large action RPG to get through with a lot of crazy weapons and demons and things to destroy. So... This will be a good game to come to Stadia whenever it does hit Google Stadia.
Generally, the games tend to hit the PEGIs and the ESRB and stuff like that, like a couple of weeks or a month before they're officially announced. So the fact that it's showing up there tells me that it's gonna be soon. Would you put that in a list of games that you would guess as maybe April Pro games?
I think so, maybe. Yeah, I mean, that would probably be a good fit for it. And I'm sure buying Pro exclusivity or access wouldn't be super, super expensive. And this would give Stadia a really good meaty action RPG to give to people on the platform, for sure.
Speaking of Darksiders, right now, Darksiders Genesis is on sale on Google Stadia. I've almost bought it again because I have two Stadia accounts from a mix-up when Stadia first launched. And I bought Darksiders Genesis on one account. And then I have every other game that I own is on my other account or is on this account. And right. I'm like... I should just buy it again so that I can have them all on one account. Even though I've already finished the game and I probably won't play it, but my brain says it's like $23. Like right now is a really good time to buy that game that you're not going to play that you already finished.
What family share is for.
Yeah, but I can't because there's too many people in my family. I can't add that other account to my family list. But that's the reason. But man, you know, Darksiders Definitive Edition 2 or whatever aside, Darksiders Genesis is a wonderful game. And if you haven't played it yet, you are missing out on a really good game. And you should definitely pick that up as a game. And I think it's on sale for pro people right now. Speaking of pro, one of the problems that I think you and I have kind of ignored a lot is the idea that if you are on pro and you've claimed a game on pro, and then say for some reason you want to buy the game, like, it's hard to do. It's very difficult to do. Now, earlier this week was Jem's birthday, so happy birthday, Jem.
Happy birthday, Jem.
And he posted a video that explains a workaround. Like, you can buy a game that you claimed on pro. Now, first off, somebody might say, well, why would you want to buy a game if you claimed it on pro? Well, what if maybe you don't want to continue to subscribe to pro every month, but you might still just want to play this one game? And maybe that game is on sale right now for like a really, really cheap price. And so you want to buy that game so that you will always have access to it, whether you are subscribed to pro or not. And that's a perfect use case for wanting to do this. But right now, basically, you go to the store and there's no real good way to do it. So Jem has a video. I will put a link in the show notes for everybody who's listening to this on the podcast version. And I will put a link in the description down below once Lloyd starts talking in a second. He has a workaround for how to do that. Lloyd, what are your thoughts, not on Jem's workaround, obviously. Thanks, Jem. You're awesome. But what are your thoughts on the idea that they made it hard?
Yeah, I don't know. At one side of me says, when you're designing a store, why would you ever design the ability for someone to buy something twice? Like, that doesn't pop up in your brain as things that you would add to John Justice's whiteboard. It's like the ability to buy a game a second time, because that would enter so many potential issues into the support system, where someone accidentally bought a game. Do you refund both licenses and then have them buy it again the first time? There's so many issues where I could see where that wouldn't even come up. But when they started offering things with pro and then pro discounts, they should have probably thought that, hey, the state of a game that is claimed in should be different than the state of a game that is purchased for money, which is different than a state of a game that you don't own. So there's really three states for the games, maybe four if you count a shared game as another state. So this is probably just something that fell off and they never thought about it. And then now there's been bigger, more pressing items that have taken them away from getting this working. It should just be added. It's like, you own this on pro. Would you want to own it forever? Click here. Similar to what happens when you have a game that's in like a Game Pass on Xbox. When the game's about to leave, Microsoft is quick to tell you, hey, you can get 25% off now if you buy the game. It's leaving Game Pass the next month. If you want to continue playing, please buy it now.
Yeah, but at the same time, sorry to just jump in here. The big difference, and it's a big difference between Stadia Pro and Game Pass, is that games don't rotate out of, like, once you claim it, it's yours forever. So I can understand, like, Microsoft really needs to do that in order to drive sales. It's almost against Google's best interest to get you to do that, because then you might unsubscribe from Pro.
Maybe. And I know the two are vastly different, and I'm not saying that just do what Microsoft did, because that's a completely different service. But it's a very nice service that they're offering. When a game is about to leave, they say, hey, this is on sale now. Pick it up. It's at a 25% discount. that warning is just what Google has to do, saying, hey, you own this on Pro. Would you like to buy a copy? And they could have it as buy a copy so someone else in your family share can play with you. They could wrap it around whatever verbiage that they want to do. But having it that way would be a really good way, because like you said, if you want to buy a game and you know that you have Pro, but you're planning on not renewing, or maybe you want to play with a friend, there's no way that you can buy a second copy of a game for your family share. It'd be nicer if that was something that was just part of the service right away, without having to do any crazy workarounds like the one that Jem has shown off.
Yeah, I will say that I saw a funny thing. I think it was on Twitter or maybe it was on Reddit, but somebody said, Stadia, the best cloud gaming, the worst UI. And I absolutely agree with that. Like the UI for Stadia has not improved very much over time. We've had like one revision where they kind of made the so you could fit more games on the screen at once, at least on the web browser. But
right.
Man, every time that I sit down to play on my TV and I'm like, oh, I want to play this, and I have a lot of games on Stadia, I got to just keep going to the keep moving over and over and over. Oh, there it is. Finally got to it. They really need their UI addressed, because there's so many issues with it that they need to search. Like I went to I saw somebody had posted on the Stadia subreddit this morning. They had said something about, I tried the demo for Outriders and I really, really liked it. And I was like, oh, I thought the Outriders demo wasn't on Stadia. Well, reading in the comments later, they were talking about trying it on something else. But so I went to the Stadia store and my instinct was, oh, go click on the top and search for Outriders and see if there's a demo. I can't do that. That's such a pain. Stadia needs to fix the UI. And Consino is saying, well, once you try GFN and Luna, you start to appreciate Stadia more. I would agree with that. However, I think Luna has a great UI. I think GeForce Now has the worst UI of all of them, mostly because it's connecting to so many different places, and it's kind of overwhelming. You look at it and, you know, like Fortnite is on there four times and you're like, well, which one is mine? You know, it's confusing. Anyway, yeah. So there's that. Then the last thing that I want to talk about before we get to CrowdPlay is the Stadia save point. January, February updates. I can't bring it up on the screen because I rebooted the computer. So first off, just to recap some of the announcements that they made in the last couple of months. You know, State Share, we talked about a bunch, available in Hitman and Pixel Junk Raiders. What's your preferred State Share lightning round? Between Hitman 3 and Pixel Junk Raiders.
Okay. I was like, do you want to know the level code? Like, what are you trying to get at here, yes. Bill? I don't know them off the top of my head.
Stadia.google.com/XY43.
Yeah, exactly. For me, I'm really enjoying what they're doing in Pixel Junk Raiders. The fact that you get a state and you get to see other people that have played and saved that state is very cool. You don't really get that with Hitman. You just load into the game and you're in a weird mission with this weapon and this hidden weapon, and this one is hidden in the kitchen, and the poison's hidden in the kitchen or whatever, and then you go about that. So I think the usage of State Share in Pixel Junk Raiders is way cooler than what they're doing with Hitman. Not to say that Hitman is bad. I just think that what they did with Pixel Junk Raiders is very cool.
I would say that Pixel Junk Raiders, theirs seems more creative on their end, but I feel like Hitman State Share gives the player a little more creative freedom to make I loved when somebody gave me a contract that I had to go and kill somebody and I had to wear a Santa outfit. And it wasn't like a target that I normally would have had. So I thought that was really cool. I liked the way that they did that. But they're definitely tackling things from a couple of different angles. LG TVs, second half of 2021 is going to not require anything to be plugged into your TV in order to play Stadia. I think that's awesome. Recently, how much longer do you think we're waiting before we get it on our Google TV with Chromecast? Sorry, yeah, nomenclature.
I just call it Sabrina now because it's so much easier to remember what the damn name of it is. You got to think it's going to be soon. That was one point I wanted to make, but I didn't want to belabor the point for the UI for Chromecast. I think what they're hoping is that they can just come out with the TV version of Stadia. And then just say, okay, well, this is where Chromecast is always going to look like. This is the future of Chromecast. But if you want a better UI, upgrade to this new Google TV device for X number of dollars, and you'll get the better UI for your Stadia. I could see that would be a good way to do it.
And I think a lot of people might hear you say that, and they'd be like, well, that sucks. I don't want to have to spend more money just for a UI upgrade. But you got to keep in mind, they shoehorned Stadia onto... Yeah. The Chromecast, like, it was not designed to do that. It's not designed to have a UI at all. Yep. It was designed to just take a video that you were watching on your phone and stream it on your TV instead, which is super cool that it does that. And I love that I can still play my games on it. But the second that I can unhook that thing and throw it in a drawer and never look at it again, I will be doing it, because the UI for Google TV is so much better, in my opinion.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. The new Google TV UI is nice. It looks really good. I've used other Google TV devices that are not so nice. I really like the way that it looks on the Sabrina device. And I can just imagine what a Stadia app would look like on that device as well. But not only on that device, all the Android TVs that are getting support, eventually other streaming sticks and services and things like that, I'm sure, are all going to get Stadia down the road. And hopefully they come up with the best idea for UI and stick with it, and stick the landing and every other stick that is possible, because I really want that experience to be good, not just for myself, but for everybody else that might be finding it for the first time.
All right, very quick, and then we're going to get to crowd play. We've got January and February content launches. These are the games that came out on Stadia in the last 2 months. And I'm going to ask you, what's your favorite? So I'm going to list them off real quick. A Place for the Unwilling, Epistory, Gods Will Fall, Hitman 3, Hellpoint, Savage Planet, Little Nightmares 2, Madden, Phoenix Point, Pikuniku, Scott Pilgrim, Shantae, Tohu, and Welcome to Elk. That's a lot of games, first off.
That's a lot of games.
Which one would you say is the one that you would recommend the most out of those last 2 months?
The one that I've had the most fun with, I haven't completed it yet. I got busy with other games, so I never finished. And that is Journey to the Savage Planet. It is such a fun, hilarious at times game, with just the alternate reality commercials and things like that. Love the game. It's free with Pro. Go download it, go play it, and jump right in. It is it's very hilarious. I mean, it has an enemy that looks like Toucan Sam, and when you destroy it, it's milk with Fruit Loops inside of it. That's what happens when you kill that enemy. What else do you need to know than that is part of this game? It needs to be it deserves to be played because of that.
Yeah, there's so many good games on this list. I didn't have time for most of them. My son completely got obsessed with Little Nightmares and Little Nightmares 2. He loved those games and finished both of them. For me, it's got to be Hitman 3. I had so much fun playing Hitman 3, and I feel like I barely scratched the surface with that replayability for that. It's so good. I can't wait to play more. All right. I asked people what you guys wanted us to talk about. Anthony Talcott sent in a topic. He said, with companies like Google, Amazon, and Microsoft taking charge on cloud gaming, companies like Shadow are starting to go under. Do you think that cloud gaming is only for the big companies? And you too can submit topics to us going to nerdnest.tv/submit, or you can just tweet it at me at runjumpstomp when I make the show notes. What do you think, Lloyd? Do you think only big companies have the ability to pull off streaming?
Yeah, I definitely think that only big companies can pull off streaming because it is incredibly expensive to pull off streaming. When you look at what Google is doing and what Microsoft is doing and what Luna is doing, you don't just need a data center with a bunch of computers. You need multiple data centers, and you need to have them engineered in such a way that the latency for this chunk of the U.S. is the same as this chunk of the U.S., which is the same as this chunk of Canada, which is this chunk of Europe. So there's a lot of engineering, there's a lot of network design, topology maps and peering and all the crazy stuff that goes into just having your back end be fast for everybody involved. And that doesn't even go into the actual streaming, which then is another layer on top of that. So the amount of money that it's going to take to offer a good streaming service, it pretty much only allows big companies to do it. And what you said earlier, or what I guess what Anthony did with Shadow filing for bankruptcy protection and hoping for an investor, just shows that for the little person, it is very tough to outlay that amount of cash to get things out. And when people try to get a Shadow rig, in some parts of the world, it's like a 9-month wait. Well, that's because they need the money to put more computers in those areas and things like that. So I could only, like, you have to be a large company already, I think, to get into this. That's why we haven't seen anything from Walmart, who announced right after Stadia that they're getting into cloud gaming too, and we haven't heard peep from Walmart at all. even though Walmart's a big company, they're not a big tech company, so they don't have that that server farm that they can start just putting new computers into to act as streaming blades or whatever.
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna use an analogy from my other job, which is I'm a teacher. And YouTube, like we're doing, I make videos for my students because of the pandemic, and because I have some of my students are virtual. So they have to be able to get the same instruction that my other students do. So I have to make these videos, which I'm lucky. I already know how to do that stuff, right? So I have to make these videos. But for most of the students, YouTube is blocked. So then, you know, we have to have these other workarounds. Now, right now, my workaround is that I store them on a Google Drive, which, as an educator, my educator account has an unlimited storage right now. Hopefully it stays that way, because I have a bunch of videos on my Google Drive and I can share it to my students that way. I've had people say, you know, oh, well, you can use this. This is, it's made for education. And I'm like, that's awesome. But their business model is terrible. Like, they're letting me upload video and not charging me anything for it. They're going to go under. Whereas if you just let me use YouTube, they're not going under. Like, Google has money to burn. They can handle just continually doing that forever. Whereas this smaller company, they cannot do what they're doing at scale. And I would hate to be a teacher who would upload all of that stuff to one of these smaller third-party things and have that smaller third-party thing disappear. And like one day you tell your students, go do this assignment. And they're like, there's nothing there. What are you talking about? And you're like, oh, okay. Well, now what am I going to do?
And not only is Google way more invested in making this a platform for everybody, for people to upload their video and do all that stuff, but they also already have the data centers everywhere. So they don't have to worry about the costs to make things quicker for one part of the world. They already have that. They've already done that. So it's just adding stuff to a place, a presence that they already have. Where a smaller company, there'd be no way that they could do that, whether it's streaming video to kids or streaming video games to your living room. There is a large capital outlay that is required to get this working for a company that doesn't already have that stuff.
You know, and Consino is saying something interesting here. He says 1 year of Shadow PC subscription is only covering 1/100th of the cost. One tenth of the cost of a rig. That means that their expenses are way higher than what they're bringing in. And because of that, because their expenses are so much higher and they're only doing Shadow PC, like that's their one thing that they're doing, because that's what's happening, they can't afford to keep doing it the same, the way that they are now. I didn't, when we made that video, I had no idea that they were filing for bankruptcy or bankruptcy protection or whatever. I had no idea about that. Because Google has all of these other services that bring in money, they can continue to lose money on a loss leader. Same thing with like an Xbox. That's why Microsoft can afford to sell you an Xbox Series X at a loss. That's why PlayStation can afford to sell you a PS5 at a loss. Every time that they sell a system, they are losing money, but they make that money up by selling games, and then they also make that money up from their other their other parts of their business. Like with Microsoft, it's Windows or selling laptops, like Surface stuff. And with Sony, it's like selling you TVs and phones and stuff like that. They have all of these other ways to make money. Same with Google. Google has a million different ways to make money, so they can afford to keep doing this. Smaller companies, they just can't. They can't keep up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
100%.
All right. Well, I think that that's it for today's episode of StadiaCast. If you want to watch the video version of it, you can head on over to nerdnest.tv. If you're watching the video version and you think, hey, I got stuff I got to go do, like mow the lawn or wash the dishes, and I still want to hear Bill and Lloyd talk about stuff, good news. Go to your favorite podcast player, type in StadiaCast, and you can subscribe there, and it's absolutely free. So anything to add before we get out of here, Lloyd?
Oh, gosh. So.
You know what? I'm a jerk. The super chats that came through, I forgot about them because we had those technical difficulties at the beginning. So no, let's hit those very quickly. So Ruben DeJeling sent in one. He said, the StadiaCast 4K fund, also impressive how some reboot of a system can help you out. Congratulations on doing tech support 101. Love you guys. We turned it off and turned it back on again, and it fixed it. So thank you. Jem sent in a super chat. Happy birthday, Jem. Thank you very much for that. And Ruben sent in another one before that. And we have a whole list of people who became members, which I'm not going to put that on the show right now. But thank you guys for the support. We really do appreciate it. You guys are awesome. Go ahead, Lloyd. I interrupted you. And go ahead, Ray Sherrod. I'm interrupting you again. Go ahead and say what Ray said.
Ray says, love you guys. Love you too, Ray. You're awesome, Ray. Go check out Ray. He does some great content and podcasts. Go check out what Ray is doing. It's been a great week, man. A great month. A lot of really amazing games coming to Stadia. The news of the death of Stadia was greatly exaggerated. We'll see how things play out the last half of this year. But so far, the first half, 3 months, I guess, but the first chunk of 2021 is looking pretty decent. And we'll see what happens as we make our way to the holidays of this year and see what changes for Stadia.
Absolutely. And before we leave, I'm just going to say a quick thank you to Consino, who just sent in a super chat as well. You guys are awesome. All right, we're out of here. I want you all to have an awesome day. Bye-bye, everybody.
Take it easy, everybody.